Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. The URC regular season is done. We know our quarter finalists. We know our Champions Cup qualifiers. The last eight settle for next weekend, starting Friday, 30th of May. Glasgow Warriors taking on the Stormers at Scotstoun. That is a repeat of last year. Then on Saturday, three games. Bulls against Edinburgh at 12:30 on Saturday the 31st. Leinster against Scarlets at 3 o'clock. Leinster 13-5 winners against Glasgow at the weekend. Sharks against Munster is 5:30. Munster qualify in sixth place overall after a win against Benetton, 30 points to 21. And Eddie O'Sullivan is with me this week. Eddie, welcome back. It's been a while since we've had you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while. All right, I've been away, but back again, back home for the summer.
You've had a good season over there?
Yeah, it went very well. We the 15th season in the autumn, we won the National Championship, the Ivy League Championship and the Liberty Conference. And then the spring is all sevens. So it was fun as well. We won the Liberty or the Ivy League Championship in sevens and we finished fifth at Nationals. We lost to the eventual winners in the quarterfinals. So it was a good year for us. Very good year all around. So I had a good fun and enjoyed it.
Good stuff. And you'll be back again in the autumn. Loads to get through today. Ulster and Connacht looking to the future, the Sevens mess, Champions Cup final, and even a bit of Thursday night Six Nations rugby if we have time to touch on that at the end. First, though, we'll start last weekend at Virgin Media Park in Cork. At halftime on Friday evening, Benetton 14-10 ahead after cutting Munster open apart a few times in that first half. We knew at this stage as well that they needed to win. No losing bonus points or try scoring bonus points were going to be enough just based on the results elsewhere. But in fairness to Munster, Eddie, the second week in a row they went out and blew the doors off the opposition in the third quarter specifically of the game. What did you think of Friday night? I was down there on Friday evening in Cork, and at halftime, I have to say, like, there was a real nervousness around Musgrave Park. It was actually a really interesting kind of an atmosphere. It was really, really edgy. They'd been a little bit all over the place in the first half, but in fairness, came out and got the job done for the second week in a row.
It's very Munster-esque, really, you know. It's kind of like they thrive on these do-or-die situations, you know. Like, we've seen loads of them over the years. They have to get a result, and it's not looking good, and they manage to pull it off, particularly at home, when they get the crowd behind them. And they knew going into the last two games exactly what they needed to do. They had to win the last two games and put the thing to bed, get to the playoffs. And of course, the big, you know, millstone on their neck was Europe. Like, to miss Europe would have been a catastrophe of monumental proportions. So it was a fair bit of pressure on them. But they tend to thrive in these scenarios where it's, as I said, do or die. They have to get it done. And I just felt with two games left, knowing their destiny and the two games at home, they would get them done, you know. Now, does that mean, like, where's their season? They're in the playoffs, they're in Europe. They're in the playoffs for now, they're in Europe next year. That's job done, really, I think. So, and they're in bonus territory now, you know, because they had such a sloppy season that this is pretty much where they wanted to be, and then the devil take the hindmost. So, will they go on and win the URC on their form? No. There's no evidence they're going to win it. In fact, there's no evidence they might even get to the semi-final. I mean, their season in bang ordinary. Like, and if you want to call it out as it is, like, they won 9, lost 9. Their average points for is 25, average points against 24. I mean, that's about as average as you can get. Like, that's on the bubble. That's a 0.5 average and everything, you know. 5 out of 10 the whole way across. It gets into the playoffs. And the thing, I suppose, that you can't shake off is that you said there at halftime they were in a bit of a problem. But I didn't doubt they would dig it out. You know, they'd just do it. That's the way they play the game. They thrive in those pressure situations. But the alarming thing for me was the way they got opened up in the first half by Benetton. Like, those tries are really, really simple tries. So is that the form that's going to get you to win a trophy? I don't think so. And there are question marks. Now, the whole backdrop to Munster, and you can talk as well about kind of Connacht in the same vein, but we'll leave that for the moment, is that it's a transition from Munster, new coach coming in. I think a new coach coming in and not being in Europe would have been dreadful. But now they can reset. Like, it's not a bad season for Munster. I'm not writing them off. I'm not saying, oh, they won't go on and get to the semi-final and maybe even get to the final, and who knows, in a final. We can play that card the whole way through. But if you're looking at their form and what they've delivered all season, it's at best average. And again, it's not what where they want to be, but I think they'll, if they go out in the quarters, they'll take it. They'll have said, well, the season wasn't good, but we got to Europe, we got to the playoffs, and we've got a new coach coming in. Everything will be a new reset, new energy, new ambition. And I think that's probably enough to keep them happy for the time being. But on their form, they're not contenders at the moment. Now, it's knockout rugby, and we know Munster on a knockout game, they can do it. But and you have to say, you have to look at the facts. It's been a very bang average season for them, given the challenges they've had off the field as well. There's no question that that played into everything.
Yeah, it's been a very, very, very up and down season. Like they've had some big results along the way, but it's funny when you look back at the season, it's the what has stopped them from being in the top four essentially are the defeats you'd really expect them to be winning. It's not losing against Leinster, it's not losing games down in South Africa, it's losing to Cardiff, it's losing to Edinburgh along the way, it's losing to Zebre in round two as well. Like
Lack of
you can
consistency.
pick any two or three results out of the course of that season, and you could kind of say, do you know what, Munster really should, for the squad of players they have. I know they don't have Leinster squad of players, but they're a top four team in that league on paper.
Yeah. I mean, the URC is not the toughest league in the world to be in, you know. I mean, there's some games there that you should win pulling up. And Munster have struggled in those games or actually fumbled the ball at the wrong time. So I suppose that you have to give them credit in a sense that it's been a messy season. They've been inconsistent on the field. Just say they've always been able to pull out rescue results, I call them. You know, when things are like they're circling the pan and they get a big result and it kind of rights the ship for a while, but they haven't got enough of those results all through the season to really make them contenders. And I think when you have a new coach coming in, players have one eye on what next season is going to look like, and they'll play out the season. But I mean, I'll probably get criticised for saying it because you don't know what Munster, they could go on and get to a semi-final or even a final because they're kind of a knockout rugby team, as we saw in the last two games. Their backs were to the wall, they get the results. But on form, if you're taking their form as a guide, their form is not good. 50%, 9 wins, 9 losses, averaging scoring 25, conceding 24. That's about as bang average as you can get. And bang average shouldn't really win you a league. So on form, I'd say they're where they probably should be, just about qualify for the playoffs. And their form doesn't say to me they're going to go on and win the URC. I might have to take that back in a few weeks because Munster are Munster. But if you're being pragmatic about it, there is no evidence that this team are firing all cylinders. And I do think this new coach coming in is something they're looking at. He's gonna change the whole thing. It's going to be a different world next year from. I think where they are at the moment, they'll probably take that. Having that, if they lost now, then in the quarterfinals, it wouldn't be the end of the world, or even the semi-finals. So I don't see them blowing the doors off for the rest of the tournament.
No, and like it's it Obviously, I think the play getting to the actual playoffs themselves are almost feel irrelevant for Munster's season at the moment. The last 2 weeks have been about Champions Cup qualification, and if there was a way of securing that Champions Cup qualification, and you don't have a playoff at the end of it, or you don't have a quarter final, everyone would have said yes, please, thank you, I'll take that. We'll end the season now this week, but they do have more games coming up, and I suppose the reason we love talking about Munster, and the reason Munster are so, I suppose the theatre of Munster over the course of a season are so enjoyable to follow, is like you go back to 2023 when they had an absolutely bang average season and somehow went on that incredible run to go on and win the title. Now I know it would be a much harder route for them to do it this year. Like
Well, that title, to be fair,
you look
is a
back then, it was
courtesy of Leinster.
Glasgow Leinster Stormers. This time round they would have to go through Sharks away, Bulls away, and possibly Leinster at the Aviva. But why they're so fun is they're far from being favourites. It would be an unlikely way for them to go and win, but they are the team that you don't want to play against in
Absolutely.
knockout rugby,
Yeah. You don't want to play
and that's
Munster,
why it's
huh?
so much fun.
That's the 23 season, to be fair. People don't like to say this, but you have to take into the fact that they got a gift from Leinster in the semi-final. Like Leinster putting out their second string effectively because they had a Heineken Cup final the following week, and I thought it was insanity at the time, and I knew it was a massive gamble. And like I was at that game, I was covering that game, and I remember with 10 minutes to go, Leinster were pounding the Munster line, and if they had scored, it was over. Like Munster season was done, and They didn't, like, they knocked the ball on, and I said, the Munster are going to come down and win this. They're going to do something, something's going to happen. And sure enough, Crowley goes into the pocket. The rest is history. And I actually, once they won that semi final, I backed them going into the final to win it because the momentum, Munster feed off momentum. But that's the problem. Their season, they haven't given themselves momentum. It's been so sporadic and up and down. And that's what you need in a league, is you need to build win after win after win and go on runs of four or five wins. And that builds momentum. And they haven't done that. So that's why I say, I hate to say I'm writing them off because they will stick it in your face very quickly, Munster. But on the form, they're not a league winning team. And I think you're right. The path to the final now, I think they have to get through the Bulls and then have to beat Leinster. That's if they that's even if they if they if they see off the Sharks away from home. So it's a very tough path for them. Again, we know maybe on the day, but can they have three of those days now? I don't know. I doubt it. And I could be wrong. And I'm a Munster. I played for Munster. I love seeing Munster doing well. But on the face of it, on the facts of it, it doesn't look like it this year. And I think they'd take it now anyway. If the season ended next round, I think the big thing for them, you're right, was Europe. For them not to be in Europe next year would have been a catastrophe beyond imaginable proportions for every reason. Just the whole Munster, what Munster stand for, what they've been about, what they've brought to the tournament, the finances of it, a coach coming in with kind of now not where he wants to be and all that. It was just unimaginable that they'd miss out on Europe. So once they got that done, I think that was almost their raison d'être for the season,
It was. And at the end of that game, I know I mentioned at halftime in Musgrave Park that the atmosphere was nervy and tense, and there was just an edginess around the place. But when the final whistle went on Friday night, and when they'd scored those couple of tries in the second half to put a bit of distance between themselves and Benetton, I thought the roof was going to lift off the place. It was absolutely fantastic, and probably made even better by the fact that it was a final game in Cork for Peter O'Mahony and Stephen Archer and Conor Murray as well. And
And that's the emotion
there
they
was a
feed off of.
brilliant there was a
That's,
there was a
yeah.
brilliant emotional
Yeah.
energy around the place, similar to Thomond Park the week before as well. And I suppose putting those two things side by side, it would have been unimaginable Munster don't make it to the Champions Cup for next season. But it would have been horrible for that to have been a final game,
Yeah.
final home game for those three players. To tend in such a deflating way.
They love that emotion, though. Like, they feed off that. And at home they get that extra kind of energy from but again, their path now is away games all the way. There's no like it's very hard to see. I think they're almost certainly gonna. I think the Bulls will beat Edinburgh. I don't see Edinburgh beating the Bulls down in South Africa. And though they've got to probably stay in South Africa if they win the next game. So it's a tough one for them. I'm not completely writing them off, but on the basis of it, I just don't see them getting there. I'd love to see it. It'd be great again. Great energy for them. But it don't, again, it would probably mask a lot of the problems they have. That's the danger of getting those results at the end of the season. Like, you can kind of, there's afterglow that you go, oh, everything's fine, really. The problems we had last season, we can forget about them because we fixed them all in the last two or three games, which is often, papering over the cracks a bit. Like, Munster have a lot of things to fix. And of course, the new coach would be expected to fix those. That's why he's coming in. Yeah, if they went on and won the ORC, it would be great, but it might, paper over some of the cracks that they actually have, because it's been a bang average season for them so far.
You mentioned in the first half, we both mentioned how they were kind of cut open a couple of times, two or three times, two of those resulting in a try, and one resulting in a penalty which led to a try. What did you see on what they were doing defensively, or what Benetton were doing in attack, that saw them stretched apart so badly? Because most of those were coming off, they were coming off first phase attacks.
Yeah, their defense is vulnerable. I mean, it seems like they're not settled in their defensive system. They're not confident, and you've guys making reads, bad reads, and coming out of the line and getting carved. You know what I mean? There were massive line breaks. They weren't like they were taking through a ton of phases and went from the
Can
halfway line to the goal line.
I interrupt actually and ask? So, like, is there a particular style of defense that they're using? Are they blitzing teams? Are they drifting? Is there a certain thing that they are doing?
Well, what a lot of teams like to do now is that it depends on the numbers. If they're down numbers, they drift. And if they have good numbers, they blitz. You can number off quickly. But it seems to me there was confusion in the ranks at who was doing what. Like there was a disconnect in their defensive line, and that's the disaster area when one guy is on one page and somebody else on the other page. That was very late. You can see that early in the season when you're kind of bedding in for the first few games, you can have defensive screw ups, big defensive screw ups, and you get caught. But at this part of the season, everyone should be lockstep on D. You shouldn't have those massive line breaks. It's one thing a team taking it through 10, 12, 15 phases, take it to the goal line and crash over. Like you haven't missed too many tackles, or you haven't had any major faux pas on the way, but you just kept the ball, took it through a ton of phases, won some collisions. And that can happen. That's not unusual. And you would look at yourself, how do we give up, that much territory in 50? But they got wiped out. The two line breaks, or the three line breaks you're talking about, were just like major line breaks. And that to me doesn't spell well. And when you're playing the South African teams, all right, this is the one thing the South African teams are dangerous in the playoffs. Across the board, South African teams bring two things to the ORC, as they always bring. One is physicality, man. They're brutally physical. They will go toe to toe. They will pound the hell out of you. And sometimes you just run out of gas against them because you make so many big tackles. There's no easy tackles against South African teams. Like, you can taste your fillings every time you hit somebody. So you have that, and then they always have serious gas in the edges, like on the outside channels. They've always got pace. So that's what makes South African teams so dangerous in the playoffs. They just bring huge physicality, and it's coming. There's not much you can do about it. And if they get free in the outside channels, they just skin you alive. They can score from 50, 60, 70 meters. It's a lethal enough combination. And I suppose part of that is, that maybe they're not as consistent as South African teams throughout the season. But when they get to the playoffs and they have a big game and they're at home crowd, they bring that sort of energy. And that's where Munster could get burned pretty quickly. It's a tough combination to defend, physicality and pace. And you've got to really be, your defense has to be really buttoned down so that you're able to make two-man tackles, right? Like you've got a tackler and an assist to at least slow the ruck ball and don't give up too many yards on the collision. And then you can't give them, to do that, you have to commit more to the contact zone to try and get double tackles. And at the same time, then you can't leave edges with lots of space out there because they have so much pace. They get out there one-on-ones, they'll beat you one-on-one. So you can't give them too much space. You can't give one of their wingers 10, 15 meters of space on the outside channel with a one-on-one. They'll probably gut you on those scenarios. So it's a very tough day. So your defense really has to be locked and loaded for over 80 minutes. And what we saw against Benetton, that the defense looked very vulnerable. Those big line breaks that kill you. And that's why, for me, it's a worry. And they have. Their defense has been average throughout the season. They've been over 20 points a game on D. So for that reason, they look vulnerable on that edge of things. And will they score a lot of points against the South African team? Again, their attack has been bang average. So, like, you don't like now, funny games can change, like yellow card, red card, the right time, you can get a result. But can you do that 3 weeks in a row? It's debatable. Will everything fall your way those 3 weeks on the bounce? It's the same for any team. Like every team's in that situation now. But I worry about when you meet South African teams in playoffs that lethal combination of power and pace, that physicality and that gas on the outside that makes them really lethal. And if they're at it for 80 minutes, it's a tough day at the office to contain that, especially if you're away from home.
Absolutely. We'll go a bit more in depth on Munster and the Sharks specifically next week. But one thing, I suppose, maybe just to finish up on Munster, just with half an eye towards next season, the arrival of Michael Milne and Lee Barron, and a fit squad as well, players coming back on deck after injury. But specifically, I want to talk about those two who've come in from Leinster on loans until the end of the season, but obviously are staying with Munster beyond into next season as well. Those two players have definitely made a big impact in the short period they've been there as well, and it will be interesting to see just the bit of bulk and the bit of extra power that they're bringing to that Munster pack next season.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be an addition for sure. But I think that will that change their season dramatically over all season? It's certainly going to add to it, but it's it's very unusual that one or two players come in and suddenly everything's different. You know, it's part of the jigsaw. It's part of what they need to fix. But it, like to hang everything around that and say, well, that's going to be the difference next year. It's hard to see that. You know, that Munster have to become a team that are consistent. Through like it's it, when you think of it, like rugby now is pretty much league format. URC, even Europe's a league format. Is that you have to be consistent in the tournament to get where you want to be. And if you're hitting high and hitting low, if you're on the bungee cord performance wise, over the period of season, you end up in trouble at the end. You end up scrambling to get where you want to be, and that's Munster to scramble to get where they were this year. And what that does as well is, when you're not hitting consistently good levels of performance, that means every week you go out and you play well, and some weeks playing well wins you the game, and some weeks playing well doesn't win you the game. The other team are just better on the day. But over the period of the season, if your performances are consistently at a pretty high level, as well as getting results and ending up at the top end of the table, what else is you get is you get that confidence around the squad to go out and play well. And every week you're not worrying, or will we play well today, or will we have one of our bad days out? And if you're having those bungee cord performances, that kind of team going out in the field, not sure what's going to happen. It's players' mind games on teams. And then when they get in tight spots, they think, oh, here we go, we're in trouble again. So that whole confidence around the squad. And that's one of the biggest challenges for Munster next year, is to get back to where they go out every week and they're going to play well. And if they may not win playing well, who knows? It depends who you're playing, where you're playing. You get a red card or yellow card, all that's part of the mix. But it's, are you hitting those targets every week in terms of your set piece, your ball retention, your line breaks, your defensive line, your tackles? All those metrics are high every week, then you're going to be in the hunt at the end of the season. And the squad are confident, we're going out today, we're going to deliver a big one again today, and let the devil take the hindmost. That's different than going out worrying, oh, are we going to play well today? Or if we get in a tight spot, are we getting a dogfight? You know, we're not good at this situation. There's that mental game that goes on over the season as well. And it becomes a mental struggle for teams when they're not playing consistently, because they're unsure going on the field what the performance is going to be like. And their confidence is rattled, and it's just a tough year for the players. Like, when the players are playing consistently well every week, they're really enjoying themselves, they're enjoying training, they're enjoying games, and of course, some days it goes against them. But by and large, when you've been that consistent in the league, most of the time you get the results, and you're in a comfortable place going into the end of the year. You know, you're in the playoffs, everything's going well, and you're thinking of knockout rugby. That's a different place than, oh, are we going to play well today? Maybe we can screw up and lose this. We need to win these last two or three games to get to the playoffs. That's, you don't want to be there. That's an inconsistent season. It's tough work, tough on the players, tough on the management. It's not a lot of fun. There's enough pressure in the game, or having that extra pressure of being inconsistent every week. And that's what kills a lot of teams, is that ability to be consistent, or this inconsistency that they deliver every week. And it means then you lose games you should win. And then you're coming into the season, end of the season, trying to win games you probably shouldn't win. It's a tough place. So it's league rugby, you know. So blowing the doors off one Saturday and then falling under the radar the following Saturday is a recipe for disaster, really. And not much fun. Not for the supporters as well, because they know, they don't know what to expect either. So they're edgy. So everyone's edgy for the whole year. And then it's you get this pall of a lack of confidence. Can we do it? Can we not do it? What will happen today? You know, will we win this game? We should win it. We're playing the Dragons away. You know, will it be one of those days where we have a bad day out and we lose over in Wales? Like, they're the kind of things that can make the season very tough. It's one thing losing to Leinster, you know, or losing to the Bulls down in South Africa. But if you go out and play well in those games, you can eat the loss, you know. And if you're playing well every week, when you do lose, it's just a tough day at the office, and you move on because you know you're going to knock a big performance next week, and we'll probably win. So all that dynamic for the year is the difference between having an enjoyable year and a tough year. And Munster have had a tough year because of those inconsistencies, I think.
Absolutely, and they'll be glad to get out of it whenever it does end. So that is Munster and Sharks, 5:30 p.m. on Saturday week, Saturday 31st of May. Leinster will be playing earlier that afternoon. They will host the Scarlets, 3 p.m. on Saturday the 31st. 13-5 winners against Glasgow on Saturday evening in their final regular season game. A fairly forgettable game all round, Eddie.
Yeah.
Would you have Would you have concerns that Leinster are still a bit deflated by Northampton, or was that win against Glasgow, was that the tough kind of slog that might stand to them later on in the playoffs? Where would you sit on that one?
I'd be more pessimistic than optimistic after that game. I was at the game, I was covering the game, and I in the first 20 minutes, to be fair, now Glasgow, I think, came with the view of let's not get humiliated like we did 5 weeks earlier. So there was a fear factor, and they came with a game plan, which wasn't a bad game plan in the sense that it was definitely going to keep the score down. But I don't think Glasgow ever believed they're going to. Now, they had a spark when they got that second half try on. Maybe here we could do something. But that was down to the fact that Leinster had been really poor. Like the way the game played out was Glasgow came with a game plan, dominated the first 20 minutes. Now, they held on to the ball fairly well, Glasgow, and they kicked pretty smartly. And when they kicked it away, Leinster had to kick it out. They were good strategic kicks. Leinster had only pick it up and kick it to touch. And then, Glasgow had another line out in the Leinster half, and they went again, and then they went again, and then they went again. And after 20 minutes of pounding Leinster, they had a missed penalty to show for all their effort. And that said to me two things. One, like, Glasgow don't have the firepower here to score. They don't just don't have the fire. They haven't been able to break. And Leinster, to be fair, defended very well. Like, ironically, the kind of bounce back for the catastrophe of the Northampton game, their defence is very good, but Glasgow didn't have the tools to open up either. And no matter what Glasgow did after 20 minutes, they had a missed penalty, which Hastings should have kicked, at least given 3 points. And then the game swung. Leinster came back into the game and basically dominated the rest of the game, but were unbelievably inconsistent with unforced errors, just mistakes after mistakes, like just turnover. They had their first three possessions in the second quarter, they knocked the ball on for no particular reason, just unforced errors. Probably trying to force the game, but Jack Conlon was interested after. He always gives a good interview. He said, "Yeah, defence wise, I was happy, but offensively, we just were so inconsistent, so sloppy." And he himself had been, he turned over a couple of balls. He was kicking himself. So they couldn't get that. And if they'd held on to the ball at all against Glasgow, they would have got a couple of scores. And I think had they got two or three scores ahead of Glasgow, then they would have kicked on. But they just couldn't throw the killer punch. And ironically, the try that got him settled, I thought was a really bad call by the referee. Hastings was called for knocking on the ball over the line. And if you look at the replay, he touched the ball, but it definitely went backwards. It didn't go forwards. And they got a 5 meter scrum, got a free kick at the 5 meter scrum, quick tap, bada bing, bada boom, they're in the corner. And that released the pressure valve. But you say they kick on here, no, they were just inconsistent. And then the second half, they dominated again. And Glasgow got a one breakout and they scored, and it got kind of squeaky bum time then, where they literally were kicked the penalty to put the two scores in them, and then they kicked it out in the end to get off the field. And what it kind of tells teams, you're watching that game and you're hoping if we get Leinster here, we might get them because they're still the best team in the league. They're the best team, arguably, in Europe, pound for pound, man for man. They're a phenomenal squad of players, phenomenal talent. So the question now is, if you're playing them in a playoff, and let's say, things go to form, just for argument's sake, and the final of the URC, which I don't doubt that Leinster will get, they're playing the Bulls, who, come like wired up, ready for action. And that becomes a dogfight.
Well, I might even strip it back a week further. For argument's sake, in 3 weeks' time, if Glasgow are going back to the Aviva in a semi-final, do you think they'll be coming back to Dublin thinking we've got a crack here, or
Yeah, but
are they
I don't think
or
they
do you
have.
think do you think yeah do you think they're good enough
No,
to
they're not.
frustrate Leinster to the point where they just don't get hammered?
No, I don't. I don't. Leinster will be a sloppy again in the next
Okay,
round. I don't see that. And
so it's a bulls or sharks that you would be worried about.
yeah, particularly the Bulls. Yeah, and I would say. But having said that, I mean, I just think if you're looking at Leinster at the moment, the key is to stay in the game against them because now, if you go into the last 10 minutes in a one score game, Leinster are likely to implode. That's the reality. It's and you look at the team, you go with the level of experience, the level of talent, how are they in those situations? Like it's like that, and it's always the same. for years I've been coaching, and you're playing a team that are better than you, your only goal on the day is to keep have it a one score game with 10 minutes to go. If you can have a one score game with 10 minutes to go and you're the underdog, you've done a hell of a job. Even if you lose it, you've given yourself a shot. So I don't I would still see them beating Glasgow more comfortably if they play them again. But I think if they ended up playing the Bulls in a final and it comes down to the last 10 minutes and it's a one score game, like I think they could fumble again. And if they do, if they, I mean, if they don't win the URC, it's almost sad for Leinster, and they won't, they can't come out and say this. They have to win the URC. No question, they have to win it. Like there's no
And
other
the and
option.
the tricky and the tricky thing for them, Eddie, is they have to win the URC, and if they do, they're still not going to get a huge amount of credit for
No,
it.
that's my second point. It's
Yeah.
lose, it's almost a lose-lose. It's a
Yeah.
terrible thing to say.
Even if you win, it's a lose
Yeah,
in the eyes of many.
it'll be very bittersweet to win the URC for them, because that's not where they were. That's not what their target was. The target was Europe. They said it all year, and they had the most catastrophic day out, and kind of shot themselves. And if they had 4 feet, they'd have shot themselves in 4 feet. It was that bad? You know what I mean? I thought, and I don't want to go over the causes, but my take is on the Leinster summary for me is they're all, you always say control the controllables, and Leinster did not control the four things that cost them the game. They screwed up their selection, they screwed up their defense system, they screwed up their substitutions by not getting those guys on the field at least at half time and waiting to the second half. And finally, they screwed up their tactical decision making, turning down two kickables to put them into extra time. So like they were all controllable, so Leinster, and they bombed on all four of them, and it cost them possibly the Heineken Cup, you know. But anyway, that's been beaten to death. But my the fallout of that now, Neil, is that if you get Leinster into that dogfight with 10 minutes to go, they're very vulnerable, because all the gremlins come out to play in those last 10 minutes in the Leinster heads, and we've seen it. You know, it's happened to them, and they now have a history of losing big games at the end in tight situations. Now, losing to La Rochelle in the last minute, La Rochelle are a top-class side, brilliantly coached.
There's levels to it. There's
There is
levels to it.
levels to it, but there's no, I mean, Northampton did a hell of a job, but you have to say that Leinster's failure against Northampton was very much self-inflicted. And I'm not taking that away from Northampton. They went out, they gave it a shot, and they got the one off. And if they play Northampton again this weekend, you know, would you say Northampton are going to win it? Yeah, I think Leinster would win it in next time round, but unfortunately, you got one bite of the cherry and that's it. But I do think there's this mental frailty around Leinster at the moment if they get into those dogfights. And part of it is that if you look back, it's I think there's plenty of historical evidence around this. I remember, you're probably too young to remember, the first Rugby World Cup back in 1987, New
I
Zealand
am.
won it at a canter. And people said New Zealand will not lose another World Cup for foreseeable future. Like, it'll be impossible to beat. They're so bloody far ahead of everybody. And the next time they won a World Cup was, I think, it was 2011. But it was a huge number. And all those World Cups, what happened is, I remember New Zealand throughout that period, they would crucify teams. Like, they went in by 30, 40, 50 points against teams right through this World Cup cycle. And then they get into the World Cup and they get in a dogfight, and they weren't used to being in dogfights. And they would lose the dogfight. And they became vulnerable in dogfights, even though they were better than the team they were playing. And Leinster have kind of taken that mantle now as a team that if you get them in a dogfight, you can get them. And like that's where they are at the moment. That Northampton defeat is going to, you know, keep them in that mental space for a while until they win a few dogfights. And that's why I think at the moment if you're looking at Leinster and you're going to have to play them at some point, and you think, what's our chances here? Statistically, you know, line up the two teams, you're going to play Leinster, the better team. They've the more talent. They've got so much going for them. But get them in a dogfight with 10 minutes to go, and you have a good chance of getting them. They have a history of fumbling the last play, and that's unfortunately that Northampton result has done nothing to alleviate that. In fact, it's copper fastened it. And I think that's the biggest problem at Leinster at the moment is the top 4 inches. If they get into a dogfight, and if they get two or three scores ahead, they will gut you. They'll score 50 points. So when they get on that confidence roll, you know. But if you get them in that scrap that they don't want to be in, they're vulnerable. And that's, I think, teams who are end up going to play Leinster in the playoffs now, that's their only chance, is get them into a scrap, and hopefully you get the break at the end. And I think there's no denying that. It's hard to say, oh no, that's not Leinster. That's where Leinster are at the moment. That's where they are at this moment in time, if you assess them. And they need to break, if they're going on to be one of the, the dynasties of Europe, as they're trying to be, and they're doing everything they can, they're doing all the right moves, they've got to be a team that win hell or high water. And that's not where they are, unfortunately. And at the moment, there is that doubt around them. And the URC now is massive pressure on them to win the URC. And as you say, it'll be bittersweet to win it.
And the final point on Leinster, we'll finish up on a positive note with them. Just one player in particular who has hit his form after a really, really tough period in the last few years, Tommy O'Brien, could hardly have bought a bit of luck in the last two, three seasons with the injury he's had. And in fairness to him, he's always talked himself up. Anytime he's done media, he has been a really, really impressive, confident fella. He has talked about how he wants to be getting into an Ireland squad. He thinks he's good enough to be there. And in fairness to him, he finally gets an injury-free run. He breaks his way into the first team. And I know it's a Lions year, so there's going to be people away, but he's pretty much nailed on to be getting into an Ireland squad this summer for Georgia and Portugal. It just is nice to see someone who's had a rotten run of luck
Yeah,
starting
well,
to starting to prove himself.
you could make the argument if he had this run in December or early January, he could have featured in the Six Nations.
Oh,
He
he
could have,
definitely could have.
in fact, you would say he probably would have broken into the team. Plus the fact that there's so much insane talent in Leinster anyway. Like it's getting on the Leinster team is an achievement in itself. But you're right. I thought we picked him as man of the match last week because I thought every time he touched the ball, he had a positive impact. And that was even when he didn't have the ball. Like one of his tackles was just,
His defense
yeah,
is his tackling
smashing.
technique
Yeah.
is outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he probably was the one bright light for Leinster, the one guy they're thinking they need to get the ball to him a lot more and they're probably going to win this game pulling up, but it didn't happen for him. But every time he was involved, and he's a big, powerful athlete. And again, it's like wingers are funny animals, I played in the wing myself, and a lot of it's down to confidence. And you get that feeling sometimes, which you see with O'Brien now. Every time he gets the ball, he's thinking try. Do you know what I mean? It's not like he doesn't care whether he's on his own 22 or their 22. He gets the ball in his hands, he's thinking, I'm going to score here. So that kind of energy and that confidence is massive for a winger. And that's why he beats people and he runs over people, he runs around people, and he brings that energy and that can lift the players around him. So I thought he was outstanding. And I would argue, yeah, if he had the chance to deliver this type of form last December and January, he would have almost certainly been in the Six Nations,
Yeah, and fingers crossed for him. He manages to stay fit for the rest of the season as well,
Well,
because
he's nailed on for the summer tour.
he's had a bad run of it in the last year or so.
Oh, yeah.
Final URC points on Ulster and Connacht, two seasons that petered out in the last few weeks. Ulster heavily beaten by Edinburgh in the final round, finished 14th overall, bottom of the Irish provinces. Some positive news coming from Australia this morning. Angus Bell looks set to be joining next season on. It looks like a short-term deal, similar to the sabbaticals that Jordie Barrett and Rico Ioane would be doing with Leinster as well. I know signing a big, powerful loosehead prop isn't going to turn Ulster into a contender all of a sudden, Eddie, but I suppose good to see some positive news for them after what's been a pretty rough season.
Yeah, it's but again I can get carried away with the idea that they're signing a big name and suddenly it's everything's going to be fixed. I think that's really whistling past the graveyard, I mean they've had some big names before, I mean they had Stephen Kitshoff came in, big prop from South Africa, World Cup winner. He did a decent job from, but it didn't really move the dial. I think Ulster have a lot of problems. It's hard to put your finger on it because they've been promising for years now. I mean, I think the Ulster supporters are the most loyal supporters in the world because they go to the well every year for Ulster and Ulster come up short. They have phenomenal facilities. They've got great supporters. They have good teams. They've made some funny signings too, I mean, they have plenty of backs. I mean, if you look at their backs, they have a great back line. I just, it's so hard to put your finger on Ulster and say, why is it every year that they seem to be just coming up short? And the problem is, if you go on this year, when they come up short every year, it's shorter every other year. You know, it's not like the graph is going up the hill here, it's going down the hill. And you got to worry for them next year. What's going to change in Ulster next year that's going to, you know, is going to flip the switch, and suddenly they're going to be nailed in to the playoffs with two games to go at the end of the ERC or the URC.
But is
And
but is the but is the argument with Ulster now that they have fallen to such a point that you're not looking them next season to be nailed into the playoffs with two games to spare? The progress for them is just getting back into that top eight, even if it takes until the last day of the season, and then the season after that, try and make sure you're in the top six. Have they fallen so far now that we are just looking at small steps, bit by bit? They have a new coaching team coming in next season. They're going to be playing Challenge Cup rugby, so they can probably put more of a focus on the URC. I like, is it possible for them to fall further? Is the question I'm asking,
well, it's interesting
because I
that,
don't think it
yeah.
is.
Well, I was talking to Darren Cave actually about it last weekend, at the Leinster game. And Darren will be much more plugged into what's going on in Ulster than I would, to be honest with you. But he is of the opinion that maybe this it's not at the bottom yet. It's not bottomed out yet. He's really
Okay.
worried. I hope he's wrong, and he obviously hopes he's wrong. He's a proud Ulster man, but he just sees that kind of a malaise in Ulster where there isn't. It's hard to see where. What's the shift that's going to change the things around? You know, Richie Murphy's doing a good job there, but you know, signing Bell is that, you know, it's hard to put your finger on it because, all right, no one's saying that Ulster should be in the Champions Cup final this weekend, or no one's saying Ulster should be strolling into the, you know, the playoffs. You know, they've a hill to climb, but. The problem is there's no indication that they're moving in the right direction. They're not, there doesn't, they're either stalling out or they're going backwards a bit. And you're saying that what's going to change next year? And is Angus Bell going to be the catalyst? I don't think so. I'm not saying he can't bring something to the party, but they've had other big signings before and they haven't really moved the dial. So I worry about Ulster, I have to say. I worry about it because I'm trying to look for positives through the wreckage at the moment. It's a bad place. Like for them to finish, you know, ahead of Zebre and the Dragons, that's their finishing point, and it's a really bad season. It's awful. And if you're looking for a gear shift, is where's it coming from? And I don't know. I'm not trying to be an expert here or like a Barstool expert. I actually don't know. And I mean, I'm not that connected with Ulster. I don't know what's going on in the background, but I would say, you know, that there is no indicators that things are going to suddenly be in an upward climb. They should do better next year. There's a couple of things. The coaching staff are more settled. They have a signing, you know, but does that really change the metric for them to the point where they're suddenly, you know, at least comfortably mid-table, closing in on playoffs? I hope so, but I just don't. I can't see anything. That's the big change for them. That's my worry. I just don't see any major shift that you can point at and say, well, there it is. That's just going to be different next year. That's just going to turn the tables. That's just going to get Ulster where they want to be or where they should be. I don't see that. And I hope the hell I'm wrong. Because I think there is a bigger picture here is that there is this worry about Irish rugby that we're effectively now solely dependent on Leinster for everything. You know, and there's a strong argument around that. And it's not a simple argument, but. You know, if Ulster had another bad season, Connacht had another bad season, and then Munster had another dodgy season, you're suddenly thinking maybe there's something to this. Maybe we are just a one-trick pony here. So like we need Ulster back in the fight. We need Connacht back in the fight. You know, we need all our teams up and running. And at the moment, it's hard to make that argument that all four provinces are firing on all cylinders. There's no argument you can make around that.
Yeah, and I'll bring Connacht in on this then as well. 22-12 winners away to Zebre to finish things off. They leapfrog Ulster up to 13th place. But again, a pretty dour season all round. Another coaching change mid-season for an Irish province. They still don't have their coaching ticket established for next season. They're saying goodbye to a handful of experienced professionals from their squad, with very few signs of signings coming in. Sam Gilbert's the only official
Yeah.
signing they have confirmed to come into the senior squad next season. I know I was sounding a bit more positive about Ulster than you a couple of minutes ago, but with Connacht, I would probably be a little bit more pessimistic. Just with the way things are looking, with the uncertainty around next season, it's a 13th place this season, and there's no guarantee things are going to get better next season.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, what they'll point, there's two positives Connacht can point to, which kind of will give them something to play towards. One is a new coach, who that is, nobody knows. That's not a good thing. I know the season is only wrapping up, but they need to get them across that fairly quickly because, like, whoever comes in to Connacht has to set out his stall and decide what they want, how they want to do it, how to change things. You know, there's a bundle of work to be done there. The new stadium is going to be obviously a shot in the arm as well, but I don't think that's going to, at the end of the day, there seems to be a little bit of, like, because Connacht have had a huge groundswell in their support over recent years based on the success they've had, and it's hard earned. You know, like, that's like Connacht is Gaelic football country and hurling country. You know, so you're wearing your rugby spurs in the west of the Shannon the hard way. You know, but you saw the energy down in Castlebar around that game that was played down there. There's a huge groundswell of support across all sports towards Connacht, but Connacht have to deliver then. You know, but there is some grumblings in the supporter base that they're
Well,
disappointed.
what worries me as well with Connacht, Eddie, would be like Mac Hansen was talking on an Australian podcast last week, and he was talking about how the news of his injury and the timeline of it got leaked out, and he said there's a lot of inf he basically suggested there's a lot of information from inside the four walls that seems to be getting out into the world fairly quickly, and I don't know, we never hear about leaks in a happy camp. I think
Oh yeah,
leaks like that.
that's
It
symptomatic. Yeah, that things aren't
suggests
well. No.
a bad mood all around inside in the province. That
Well,
kind of thing would worry me.
when a player calls that out, it does mean that they're not happy that,
And
you know.
it's probably been discussed between the team as well that they're not happy
Oh,
about it.
no question. Like, if he's saying it publicly, you can bet your bottom dollar that it's been talked about among the players. And that, again, that's a symptom of not having a head coach who's wrapped around the team and has everything under control. And of course, you don't have a head coach, that sort of stuff happens. I think there's missteps, there's miscommunications, because all those systems around the team, like we just see the team play on the weekend, but there's so many things that go into that, which is, you know, organization and planning, communication, media, and then there's the rugby stuff as well, like the scrums and lineouts, there's tackles, there's rucks, you know, there's continuity, there's transition defense. Like, they're the nuts and bolts. But if you don't wrap the nuts and bolts with a really good system, administrative system, and when they're missing a head coach, that's the person that keeps all the nuts and bolts tight around the team. And when they're not there, things get loose and they get wobbly, and you know, things start to wobble, like it's like an old car, you know, with the wheels start to wobble on it. Like, so you need a head coach. So that's why their appointment has to be pretty quick and pretty solid. And if they don't, if this fumbles in for another month, even, you got to worry about next year. Whoever comes in then has got to try and put everything right very quickly. But the frustrating thing about Connacht is, for everything you can say about them on, you know, in a critical sense, they're still great to watch. Actually, great. Like, they are, they're one of the most entertaining teams in the URC, but they have a penchant for shooting themselves in the foot.
Big time.
So, you know, as the old saying goes, they're exciting with and without the ball. It's not a great plan. You shouldn't be exciting without the ball. It should be exciting with the ball. So they project forward and what's going to be different next year. Well, if they get the right person at the helm and everything tightens up, there's a chance for them to actually move forward next year. And again, there'll be a shot in the arm around the new stadium, but I think you can overplay that. And if they start getting results again and playing with a nice style of rugby they do play, you know, the fans will turn, you know, again back in their favour. And I'm not saying the fans have turned against them, but there is a certain amount of disquiet around, you know, the Connacht support. They feel the team aren't giving them what they should, and that's a fair comment. Like, you know, to finish 13th in the league above Ulster, like, you know, Ospreys are ahead of them, the Lions, Benetton, Cardiff, even Scarlets, who are in the playoffs now. They're all teams Connacht should be, you know, well able to give as good as they get, which you know, and there it really hasn't happened from this year. But I will give them the pass on the fact that if you lose a head coach in the middle of the season, you have to think the build up to losing the head coach hasn't been much fun for everybody either. So you can
Exactly.
almost think the whole season has been a really messy of affair, because you know things weren't perfect before the head coach left. They're certainly not perfect after the leave, but for the point where the head coach steps away, things couldn't have been perfect there. And that's not pointing the finger at anybody. What I'm saying is that for Connacht, it's been a really messy season, and the results prove it. And they're now 13th on the table. But there's a chance for them if they get the right person at the helm and everything tightens up again, they can get back on the horse in a meaningful way and a good start to the season. And then maybe the new stadium coming on stream when things are going well, it'll be an extra boost. You know, but the stadium coming on stream is not going to rescue a bad season. If they're struggling when the stadium opens, the stadium isn't going to be the game changer.
Yeah,
You know,
and you
they
don't
need
want
to get a
to,
lot
and
of things fixed before that. And they are in a way, I have a little more optimism around Connacht than around Ulster. Because I'm not, I think Connacht's biggest thing at the moment is finding the right head coach who's going to tighten everything up. And suddenly everyone's nose is pointing in the right direction or the same direction, and off they go. That could be enough to get things moving in the right direction, and a new coach can do that. So that's my hope, is that that might be the catalyst for Connacht getting, you know, back in gear again. But there's a job of work to do as well. It's not just about flipping a switch. There's a lot of
Absolutely.
stuff to be fixed, nuts and bolts included.
Absolutely. We are running out of time. I do want to finish up though on the seven situation because that's run on for the last week or so. This day last week, word got out the IRFU were going to pull the plug on the men's sevens program. Had been expected that the players would be told this news a couple of days ago on Monday, but the word broke early and the IRFU had to go with it. In their statement, they say it's part of a broader strategic effort to ensure long-term financial stability and focus on key initiatives outlined in the union's strategic plan. They say their assessment concluded the men's or the review, the independent review's assessment concluded that the men's sevens program doesn't contribute as a development pathway to the 15s game, with current academy structures for the 15s game in place, with the provinces offering greater development opportunity for men's rugby. There's been a lot of anger from the sevens community, ex-players like Harry McNulty, Terry Kennedy, and Greg O'Shea. They've all been vocal, arguing against the financial reasons given by David Humphreys and Kevin Potts. They say some of the numbers put forward out there suggesting that the sevens game isn't far out, actually off washing its own face. They say the savings would be minimal in the grand scheme of things, and that this is all the financial excuse is just an excuse to get rid. Your thoughts on all of this, Eddie?
Yeah, it's a really messy one because I think the way the RFU rolled it out, you know, didn't really make anybody happy. I think I think people saw the writing on the wall, and then the RFU rolled it out. It was a fait accompli. Now, it's a tricky one for the RFU. Like, if you step back, I try to step back from the whole thing and say, like, this the Sevens was kind of David Nussafora's baby. Like, he was very much into sevens and pushed the sevens narrative, pushed the sevens program. There's also the Olympic dimension to it. So every 4 years we get a shot at an Olympic medal, and there's funding around that as well. It's different from the women's program because I still think this women's sevens program is still a pathway to the women's game at 15s. But that is true. I mean, the men's sevens is not a pathway to the 15s game. There was a time it was, but they're two different games now, and I think so. What the union say about that is true. So it has to be a standalone program. The question then is, what's the general support of the public for sevens? And I know if we won an Olympic medal, everyone would be really happy about that. But the Olympics is every 4 years. So you're saying is we're going to keep this program up and running to have a shot at an Olympic medal every 4 years. That's what really it's about. Because let's be honest here, when the Irish men's sevens team are playing in Vancouver, or they're playing in Wellington, or they're playing in South Africa, or they're playing in Hong Kong, nobody in Ireland is really dialed into it. It's just a fact of life. Like, sevens does not resonate in Ireland. We have one sevens team in Ireland, and it's basically the men's sevens team and the women's have with women's sevens team. There's no really club sevens going on. There's no pathways. Most kids in Ireland, the vast majority of them play 15s. So we don't have a kind of a sevens footprint. We've kind of developed one over the recent years, and the excuse was we wanted to be competitive in the Olympics. So I think this is the RFU saying, like, sevens is almost a manufacturer thing for us. We have to put huge effort into getting a team together. We've put a huge effort into competing in the World Sevens program, which, by the way, it posted a loss of 24 million last year. So where's that Sevens tournament, World Tournament going, the HSBC Sevens? Because there's very few people watching it. I mean, I guarantee you, when there's, and I coach Sevens in America. I coach in the spring. I've coached Sevens. And I was watching some of the Sevens this spring on the one in Vancouver in particular. It was on the similar timeline to me. I was able to watch it. And I guarantee you, if you rang anybody in Ireland and said, oh, see how Ireland did today in the Sevens in Vancouver, you'd have traveled a long road to find someone say, oh yeah, I was watching that this morning, like, so it's a hard sell in Ireland. So I think the RFU are strategically saying sevens isn't really our bag, and okay, we're going to take a bit of criticism and a hit for not being competitive for an Olympic medal, but we don't see this as another string we need in our bow. And that's their, I think, yeah, I can see how the argument is that it's not a ton of money in the greater scheme of things. I don't think the RFU are saving tons of money on this. It wouldn't be far off arch its face because of sponsorship, and there's government funding as well comes in for it because it's an Olympic event. So I think the RFU haven't handled this particularly well, but in terms of what they want to do, I think they've made a statement as they don't see sevens, men's sevens, as a strategic pathway for us, and we're not going to pursue it anymore. It's pretty harsh, but I think that's where their thinking is. Is it right? I don't know. I mean, you could make the argument that we should probably have a sevens team because we should compete in the Olympics. But on the side of it is, outside of the Olympic cycle, that's, once every 4 years, there's not really many people in Ireland engaged with sevens. Like, and the people don't follow sevens. They don't, and they're not aware of it even. That's the facts. You know what I mean? I would be surprised if anybody knew or could say how Ireland did in their last three or four sevens tournaments in the HSBC circuit. People are just not engaged with it. So the RFU don't see this as a major priority. And that's why they're pulling the pin on it. Yeah. But is it right? Is it wrong? You could argue the up and down. But I would have to say there isn't really a sevens footprint around outside of having a men's and a women's team that play in the world circuit. That's it. There's nothing else there.
Obviously,
So.
there's no one here from like the seven system to kind of to make the counterpoint. So I will just put a couple out there that have been made by some of the ex players and stuff like that in the last few days, so that we can at least say that their voice has been heard. Like I heard ha one of the points Harry McNulty would have used, the Ireland former Ireland sevens captain, was obviously sevens isn't played in Ireland. There aren't tournaments in Ireland where people can come out and watch, but. Like, is there the argument to be made that a national sevens team on that World Series circuit is almost like a marketing tool because it's going to the places where the Ireland men's 15s team are never realistically going to go? They're not going to go play a game in Singapore and Hong Kong and some of those places in Dubai as well. Is there any argument to be made that having an Irish team going out abroad, spreading the gospel of rugby around is an opportunity to grow the game, to grow the brand of Irish rugby.
Yeah, and look, it's interesting. I know Harry going back a long way because I coached him in Gary Owen 1 year, and actually I advised Harry going to sevens. Ironically, and he's a brilliant sevens player. And at that time, it seemed to me there was a growth in sevens, a pathway in sevens, and he did really, really well. And he was a fantastic player, a fantastic leader, great captain of the Irish sevens team. And I can imagine, I can understand his passion around why he would hate to see that after all the work he's put in, all those guys that were through the mill for those years, now suddenly the whole thing comes crashing down. But it's a hard argument to make that we need brand recognition and Sevens is going to deliver it. Like, I just think the RFU, and I'm not, I in case people think I'm saying the RFU are right here, I'm not, I'm trying to look at it from both sides. And I would say the RFU were saying it costs us money, not a load of money. I think the players are right, actually. I think the players are right that the money argument doesn't really stand up. This is not going to change the direction of Irish rugby's finances. Like, Sevens rugby does not, make or break their balance sheet every year. So I just think they are, if you are confident, the fact that they don't see outside of the Olympic cycle men's sevens being of any value. That's I think where they are. It's very harsh, and I think there is a value to it, but I think what they will look at is on the ground in Ireland there is no real support for sevens. We don't have any sevens at club level. We don't have any sevens tournaments really. It's just a non-event, and people are not engaged with the HSBC seven circuit. When Ireland are playing, nobody knows. It doesn't get like how much media coverage. Like, here's a great idea. How much media coverage do you get of the men's and the women's even of sevens, unless they win a tournament? You hear about it after.
I'll be honest, we like it just from our own shop, it gets minimal coverage.
Yeah.
I'll put my hands up straight away and say that.
So the media don't cover it because the Irish rugby public are, and the thing is, we are so engaged in 15s. Like there is huge support for 15s rugby here, and rugby in Ireland has grown almost exponentially in terms of the supporter base over the last 20 years. But sevens have never really caught that sort of imagination. So it's very tough on the guys like Harry McNulty and the guys who put in huge effort over the last number of years to try and establish the game, and to see now just would just cut away, just like brutally cut away like that. I get where they're coming from. And I'm trying to see the bigger picture as well. And I see the RFU here are pretty confident that this is a controversy that will blow out in about 2 or 3 weeks, because there's going to be no marches on Lansdowne Road to save the men's sevens program like they marched on Lansdowne Road to save Connacht. That's unfortunate, but the RFU know that, and it's almost like it would never have happened probably only for David Nussafora carrying the torch for it, because he was the big kahuna in rugby in Ireland for this time, and he had huge power and he drove the sevens. And even now I think he would be himself probably pretty disappointed the way the RFU have pivoted away now that he's only out the door a wet weekend and the whole thing has changed. But that's an indication of where the RFU see sevens. And I see both sides of it. I see the devastation that lads who put all the effort and feel about it being, just cut away like that. The RFU see it as like this is going to be a controversy for 2 or 3 weeks, because nobody in Ireland really is that vested in sevens rugby. There's going to be no march on Lansdowne Road to save the sevens team. If it was, they're trying to cut off Connacht, that'd be a different wool, And that's probably the best way to put it. There's just not the grassroots support for sevens here. And the RFU see it almost now as an irritation to have to run a sevens program. But they still could get blowback from the government that, like, we are squandering a chance here to win an Olympic medal. There's no reason that an Irish sevens team couldn't pick up a medal in the Olympics, because it's that type of game that any team on the day could win the tournament. I've seen that. So there's probably going to be blowback at government level, like that we're just taking away an opportunity for a medal at Olympic level. But will the public be very vocal on that? I doubt it very much, unfortunately.
It'll be interesting to get the thoughts of David Humphreys the next time he speaks to the media. He generally does one or two every year. We're probably due a chat with him sometime soon, and I'm sure those questions are going to be right top of the list. Eddie, we've taken up enough of your time. We had a huge amount to get through. We didn't get through all of it. Quick one word answer: who's winning the Champions Cup final this weekend? Bordeaux Begle or Northampton Saints?
On form, Bordeaux, I think they have the horses fit. I think maybe Northampton's final was against Leinster, unfortunately for them. You never know, but on a balance, I think Bordeaux would probably win it.
Given the quality of the two teams in attack, I'm predicting it's either going to be 40 all or it's going to be
Yeah,
dour and it's going to be 3-0.
who knows? Yeah, finalists can go either way on those.
So that's live on RT2 and RT Player this Saturday from 2 p.m. coverage getting underway. And there's also a live blog on the RT News app as well. Eddie, thanks a million for joining us. Thanks for giving your time. And we hope to speak to you again soon.
My pleasure. Thanks,
Cheers,
mate.
Eddie.